Coming up is the news.
Headlines: Iran's President Ibrahim Raisi hits back at his U.S. counterpart for, quote, inciting chaos, terror and destruction in another country. The Hamas resistance movement says Israel's plans to Judaize Al-Aqsa Mosque will be foiled, warning that such violations could lead to a religious war. Also ahead, Russia's energy giant Gazprom warns it will cut supplies to Europe if a price cap is put on Russian gas exports to the continent. Welcome to World, the news from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Our top story this hour: the Iranian president has denounced his U.S. counterpart for inciting chaos, terror and destruction in Iran by voicing support for riots.
The U.S. president allows himself to make comments on Iran riots. He has made such comments two or three times in the last couple of days. It's a regret that those who claim to be supporters of human rights, security, peace and stability support riot, terror and chaos in Iran.
Ibrahim Raisi's comments came shortly after Biden called the Iranian government oppressive for what he called a crackdown on protests. The U.S. president also expressed surprise at, in his own words, the courage of people and women taking to the streets. Raisi now says U.S. officials are angered whenever the Iranian nation takes an innovative and positive step, and they are thrilled to see Iran face difficulties or unrest. The president says the U.S. has played a role in many riots, acts of sabotage and terror in the region. He cited the U.S.'s 20-year occupation of Afghanistan or its support for Israel's atrocities. Raisi says the Iranian nation knows its enemies and will prevent them from reaching their goals. Tim Anderson is the director of the Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies. He tells us how various U.S. administrations have done all they could to weaken Iran.
I think it's very well known by now that Washington, whatever the administration is there, whether it's Obama or Trump or Biden, is going to use all of the resources at their disposal to try and weaken, divide, undermine Iran. And every new opportunity will be seized on, basically, because, of course, we know their style of warfare these days is a lot more to do with using proxies, the proxies like the MEK, like the proxies that are in the northern Iraq, like the proxies that are used against Syria, for example, and a constant stream of propaganda to weaken or to confuse their own audiences, principally, basically. I don't think that's really confusing the Iranians, though. It's a long-standing practice of the U.S., and it's emerged in public, and they're not even embarrassed to say it now. They want to starve people, make them desperate, make them rise up against the government, because they know, as they said about Cuba 60 years ago, they said they knew that the Fidel Castro was very popular. The only way for them to try and overthrow the regime there was to make the people desperate and starve. And similarly, you recall Mike Pompeo a few years ago saying that if the Iranian people wanted to eat, they would have to comply with U.S. demands. So it's a very open, direct assault. Of course, it's illegal. It shouldn't be called sanctions. These coercive measures are illegal measures under international law, but they are specifically designed to make people desperate and try and divide people.
The British capital, London, has hosted this year's annual Islamic Unity Conference. The event brings together religious leaders of various Muslim sects together under one roof to promote peace and combat division. This year's conference comes amid a global campaign targeting the Islamic Republic of Iran. Robert Carter attended the event and has filed this report.
Muslim religious and community leaders from a variety of sects gathered in London on Sunday for the 24th International Islamic Unity Conference. The annual event, held at the Islamic Centre of England, aims to promote religious unity, combat sectarianism, and defend Islamic values.
This event coincides with a similar Islamic Unity Conference held annually inside Iran. The Islamic Republic has come under a sustained attack in recent weeks by Western groups advocating for regime change following the unfortunate death of Iranian woman Mahsa Amini.
Many groups are involved in backing the anti-Iran riots, most notably Western-based Iranian dissidents and supporters of the MKO terrorist group. Although they are divided on doctrine, one factor unites them: Islamophobia.
They are hijacking maybe an agenda to portray this clash of civilization, and they are portraying this narrow-minded, neoconservative narrative that Muslims are barbaric, Muslims are narrow-minded, and Muslims need to be liberated. And this was the type of language that was used at the dawn of the second and the first Gulf Wars, of trying to say, we're here to liberate Muslims, we're here to liberate their countries, and this is very dangerous.
These are actual people who have an agenda to make Muslims and Islam enemy number one across the world. So whether it's targeting the Islamic government and the Velayat-e Faqih system in Iran, or whether it's attacking a woman with hijab on the streets of East London, actually the phenomena is rooted in the same thing. It's an actual organised attack on Muslims.
The anti-Iran riots have expanded to include an international campaign condemning Islam and Islamic concepts, such as the hijab. It's now up to Muslim leadership to find ways of combating the tide of anti-Muslim abuse. Initiatives such as this intend to inspire a fight back. Robert Carter, Press TV, London.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has slammed attempts by the Israeli regime to Judaize and divide Al-Aqsa Mosque in the occupied old city of Al-Quds. In a statement, the group urged the Palestinians to maintain their presence in the mosque's courtyards to counter Tel Aviv's raids on the holy site and the regime's efforts to tighten its grip on the mosque. It said such attempts by Israel could lead to a, quote, religious war in the region. The movement noted Palestinians will continue to defend their territories until they are freed from the occupiers. Hamas further blasted Israeli settler storming of the mosque backed by troops. Israeli right-wing groups have called for raids on Al-Aqsa Mosque to increase the Jewish presence there in order to turn it into a Jewish worship area. Russian and Syrian forces have killed 20 Daesh terrorists in a joint operation in southern Syria. According to the Russian military, the operation took place in the town of Jassim in Dar'a province. Those killed included the terrorists involved in the bombing of a bus last week that left at least 18 Syrian servicemen dead near Damascus. The bus attack was one of the deadliest in months against Syrian troops. Daesh, which claimed the responsibility, has been targeting military personnel over the last few years. A similar bus explosion killed at least 11 Syrian troops and 2 civilians in the northern city of Raqqa back in June. Parties to the war in Yemen have signed the last list of prisoners to be swapped between Sana'a and Riyadh under the Amman Agreement. Abdul Latif Al-Washali reports from Sana'a.
The Prisoners Affairs Committee of Sana'a signed the last list of prisoners with Saudi Arabia, under which inmates will be exchanged between Sana'a and Riyadh. Head of the committee, Abdul Qadir al-Murtada, said the database that was an obstacle to the implementation of the agreement has been corrected.
The 4 Geneva Conventions, especially the 3rd Convention on the Protection of Prisoners, mention the rules for the protection of prisoners as a humanitarian issue, and no party should link it to political matters. Unfortunately, countries on the Saudi-led coalition are working in line with the agenda of America and Israel, so it made no move until receiving American directives, and this has always been a hurdle to solving the rest of the issues.
Al-Murtada said a visit by the Sana'a delegation to Saudi prisons was successful, as the Yemeni prisoners were reassured that the swap deal would move forward. He hoped that the reciprocal visits will be a first step towards settling the humanitarian issue of the prisoner exchange.
The results of the recent visits were positive. The lists were corrected for both parties, and the names that will be exchanged between us and Saudi Arabia in the coming days have been signed. We in the National Committee for Prisoners Affairs consider the prisoners' issue as a humanitarian one. We should not be linked to military or political matters. If all parties are serious enough to resolve this issue, it will open up prospects for setting other issues as well.
Recently, a Saudi technical delegation visited Sana'a, while another from the Prisoners Affairs Committee of Sana'a entered Riyadh to verify the names of prisoners of both parties.
The warring sides in Yemen have taken a new step toward peace by visiting each other for the first time. Observers say if the prisoners' swap deal moves forward, it could help end the war. Abu Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Turning elsewhere now, Russia's energy giant Gazprom warns of tit-for-tat action against any potential move by the European Union to impose a price cap on Russian gas. The head of Gazprom said gas deliveries to Europe would be halted in case the bloc goes ahead with the price capping. Alexei Miller described the plan as a unilateral decision, saying Gazprom complies with terms and conditions of the existing contracts. He added, imposing a price cap on Russian gas by the EU will be a breach of those contracts. The energy ministers of 15 EU states have sent a joint appeal to the European Commission demanding a price cap for gas imports to the bloc. They argued that the decision will be in line with efforts to fight soaring energy prices in Europe. Clashes have erupted between French police and angry demonstrators who rallied in the capital, Paris, to protest against soaring living costs and climate inaction. Police used tear gas and pepper spray to disperse the protesters, who in turn threw objects at security forces. The protesters were also pushing against proposed pension reforms. The demonstration was called by left-wing political parties backed by hundreds of associations. France has already been hit by weeks of refinery strikes that have caused fuel shortages across the country. The workers demand wage hikes to cover inflation and include a share of the huge profits made by oil companies. Prime Minister Elizabeth Borne has warned the striking oil industry workers that the government might use its requisition powers to force them back to their jobs to ease fuel shortages. Political commentator John Stepling explains how the people in France are finding it difficult to get by with the ongoing cost of living crisis.
Cost of living has risen so precipitously. The gas prices are amazingly high, even in Scandinavia here. Food prices have risen far beyond anything that's actually even reported. And again, this is true even in a country like Norway. So people are reaching a point where it's not sustainable for them. And winter, of course, is coming, and the prospect of having to heat your house in the winter months, especially in northern European countries, is causing people a great deal of anxiety. And the governments of Europe have no answer for this. In the EU, Ursula von der Leyen just keeps repeating the same sort of mantra about we have to send weapons and money to Ukraine and so forth. Prices are just unrealistically high. I mean, impossible for people to survive if they stay at this level. Impossible for them to heat their homes in winter if they stay at this level. Just literally impossible.
And the UK Prime Minister Liz Truss is insisting on her commitment to improve the country's economy as she struggles to save her premiership. In a newspaper article, Truss said it was, quote, a wrench to have to fire her friend Kwasi Kwarteng as Chancellor of the Exchequer. She noted that the government cannot pave the way to a low-tax, high-growth economy without maintaining the confidence of the markets. Truss has been under fire after she made U-turns on two major policies over next year's budget plan. Her economic proposals adversely affected the market, with the British pound crashing to a record low and the government's repayments on borrowing pushing up. Now, some politicians, including those within her own Conservative Party, are calling for her resignation. This as the UK has been dealing with a dire cost of living crisis. While the UK is not the only European country grappling with a cost of living crisis, many other European states are facing the same problem, with inflation out of control due to soaring energy bills. What governments are struggling to do is not only how to tame inflation. They spent heavily on programs that subsidized people during the COVID pandemic. Add to that recession due to lower gross domestic product as a result of the Ukraine conflict. Top EU diplomat Josep Borrell is under increasing fire for a recent analogy he made. In it, he drew what many have described as a racist and offensive contrast between Europe and the rest of the world. The remarks sent social media into a frenzy. That brings an end to World Bulletin for this hour.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
The global transition from unipolar world order to a multipolar one has now become the gospel truth, with China ascending globally and Russia challenging the West forcefully. But how Muslims can secure a front row seat in this once-in-a-century transition? Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, answered this strategic question in his recent speech before Muslim scholars participating in a pro-unity conference held by Iran. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned, please. Kayhan, international staff writer, wrote, "When the leader of the Islamic Revolution calls the Islamic Republic of Iran is a mighty, unshakable tree, he is not exaggerating. As a matter of fact, he is speaking the undeniable truth, as the avowed enemies of the Iranian people very well know from their string of failures of the past 43 years, during which they have always ended up in a state of dizziness with badly bruised heads bleeding from the hits received from the twigs of the firmly rooted tree. The mighty, unshakable tree of the Islamic Republic, whose steadily growing branches ensure the security and welfare of the Iranian people, in addition to providing shade for the independent governments, movements, and people of the region, has foiled the American bids to invade, hatch coups, impose a war, murder scientists and senior military commanders, unleash the most macabrely murderous terrorists in such friendly countries as Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan, illegally freeze assets, clamp economic sanctions, and instigate characterless men and women to indulge in scattered cases of urban terrorism." Washington is totally wrong in thinking the outcast of the society with no roots in either Islamic faith or Iranian culture, and who cannot even be called humans in view of their desecration of sanctities, obscene sloganeering, and indecent attire, can axe at least a few branches of this giant tree. And there is another question here. How can a country nurtured by sacred blood of martyrs and flourishing on the faith and dedication of scores of millions of Iranian Muslim men and women active in all spheres of society be overrun and handed over to the minions of the US, Britain, France, and the fake regime of Israel? Revolution requires roots to triumph and continue its triumphant course, as the dedicated Iranian Muslim masses have constantly shown from 1978 till this date, helping the country achieve spectacular success in all fields, including medicine, modern science and technology. No wonder the leader of the Islamic Revolution, at the mention of whose name the US and its comrades in crimes shake in fear, has called the Islamic Republic of Iran a mighty, unshakable tree. Also, Tehran Times wrote this headline saying, "Unity key to sublime position in a changing world," the leader of the Islamic Revolution said. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei has explained how Muslims can secure a sublime position in a world in transition. The global transition from unipolar world order to a multipolar one has now become the gospel truth, with China ascending globally and Russia challenging the West forcefully. But how Muslims can secure a front row seat in this once-in-a-century transition? Ayatollah Khamenei answered this strategic question in his recent speech before Muslim scholars participating in a pro-unity conference held by Iran. The 36th International Islamic Unity Conference was held in Tehran with Iranian President Ayatollah Sayyid Ebrahim Raisi as the key speaker. The participants of the conference, the heads of the three branches of government, including judiciary, executive, and legislative, and a group of government officials, met with Ayatollah Khamenei on the occasion of the birth anniversaries of Prophet Muhammad and Imam Sadiq. In his speech, the leader spoke about the character of Prophet Muhammad, saying, "The Holy Prophet's character is unique in the entire universe. His birthday is a very important, great day. Calling the birthday of the Prophet an aid is not just for holding a celebration and commemorating him. It is also for learning from him and setting the Prophet as an example." He said, according to a readout of the speech put out by the website of Khamenei.ir, "One of the lessons from Prophet Muhammad for the Islamic nation is the Prophet grieves for your suffering." Of course, this doesn't just refer to Muslims at the time of the Prophet. It means the sufferings of the Muslims in Palestine, Myanmar, etc. today grieve his pure soul. Ayatollah Khamenei then addressed the suffering of present-day Muslims and linked it to global imperialism. "Global imperialism rejoices at the suffering of Muslims. Why are Muslim nations suffering like this? Why are the Muslims suffering economically, politically, and from aggression, colonialism, civil wars, etc.? One of the most important reasons is the division of Muslims," he said, adding, "The Muslim nation's current sufferings are due to their division. This is what happens when we are divided, not concerned about each other, and even hostile to each other at times. The Quran says, when you are divided, you will be humiliated. Thus, you will help others to dominate you." The leader of the Islamic Revolution also pointed to how the enemy sows division among Muslims. He said the enemy does not want to see Muslims united. Instead, it wants them disunited. Furthermore, the enemy planted Israel in the region to serve as a base for the West. According to the leader, the enemy wants the opposite of unity between Muslims today. They created a cancerous cell in the region, the Zionist regime, to serve as a base for Western enmity against Islam. They brought the murderous, brutal Zionists to oppressed Palestine, creating a fake government to do this. In this context, the leader addressed the trend of normalization between Israel and some Arab states. He said normalization with Israel is an act of treason. "The enemies are working to do something so that the Zionist regime, this cancer cell, won't be called the enemy anymore. They wish to create more discord between the countries of the region. These normalizations are one of the biggest acts of treachery against Muslims," the leader said. Since 2020, some Arab states, namely Bahrain, Morocco, the United Arab Emirates, and Sudan, have moved to establish full diplomatic relations with the fake regime of Israel, despite warnings from Iran and discontent in Arab public opinion.
Thank you. IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
With the presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. This is Viewpoints. I'm Atta, the host of this program. Within the studio for today's discussion are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sayyid Mohsen and Brother Rouhani. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
Okay, Shaykh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Okay, for today's discussion, with the presence of two dear experts, we want to talk about the concept of Islam and the rights of the men and women in the religion of Islam. Okay, Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi, let's start with you, brother. First of all, let's differentiate between two important concepts, that is the gender equality and gender equity inside the religion of Islam. Which one is supported by the religion of Islam, equality or equity?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, it depends on the definition that you give for equality and equity.
Okay.
The main issue is that we have two different definitions. One is Islamic definition, and the other thing is, which is, been provided by the Western media or the Western people. If we take the general meaning that they say like equality or equity, Islam emphasizes on the justice, equity,
yes,
fairness. And this is the main theme of the Islam. Even the rights of the women and men is based on the justice.
Yes.
And when we talk about the equality, we need to look at the Islam, that Islam is a religion which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has sent, and Allah has created us to become perfect. In order to become perfect, He has provided the equal rights for the man and woman.
Okay.
The main aim is to go towards the perfection, to become kamil.
That's right.
We refer to the insani kamil, the perfect human being, which are the prophets and Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam. Okay. In the perspective of becoming perfect, Islam has provided both things, the equal rights and the equity as well. And there is no difference between man and woman.
Mm-hmm.
The way a man can get to the perfection, the woman has also the same grounds, the equal grounds,
okay,
to reach to the perfection.
Yes.
But when we talk about the material world, mm-hmm, the worldview, where, for example, the man is earning, for example, annually $60,000.
Mm-hmm.
The lady should earn the same thing. Maybe he's working this way, she should work that way. He's clothing this way, she, okay, should clothe that way. Now, this is something which has been created by the human beings and not the God.
Yes.
And it has nothing to do with the religion. It has nothing to do with the rights of the man and woman.
Okay.
Because what we are making these rights through our own intellect, through our own thinking. And we have proved, the human beings, mm-hmm, have proved that they have made wrong rules, wrong things.
That's right.
Wrong ideas,
okay,
about the freedom, about the woman, about the man.
But you know, nowadays when we look, for example, at the rights of the women, and especially the women which are after the rights, you know, in the world, in the developed world, the case is that they are after equal things. You know, and we know that according to many definitions, this equality is that the conditions are the same, but the results might be unfair. Okay? And this is exactly an opposite to the concept of equity, which is adala. That could be very much near to musawat, okay, something, the sameness. But equity or adala is non-similar conditions which gets to equal results, okay, at the end. Is equal. So, and the best example, if you search it, you know, the difference between equity and equality on the net is looking over the fence, okay? Over the fence where there are some given, we can say, some podiums or the benches to the people with different, heights.
Yes.
And is it at all true and equal to give all the people the same height or no? To give the smaller child a higher height or higher bench to look over the fence, or just picking up the apples from the tree, you know, these are the good examples which are over there. And I think in the religion of Islam, based on the potentials of the women and the talents and the capabilities of the women's, you know, the concept of adala is very much emphasized, isn't it, Sheikh?
Yes, of course. When it comes to the Islamic teachings and doctrines regarding men and women, or their rights and rulings, we have to understand that Islamic rulings and ahkam is based on a kind of anthropological understanding of human being. It means that Islam is the religion which is completely in accordance with the nature of the mankind. فطرت الله التي فطر الناس عليها. So Islam is the religion of fitra. Fitra here means the essence or the nature of human being. Now the question is that naturally and essentially men and women are different or the same. If they are different, so of course they deserve different kind of rights. If not, if they are exactly the same and similar, then of course there must be equality among men and women. So that's why when Islam tells us and teaches us that you men deserve these, for example, certain rights, and you women, your rights are different from men, it is because of this that the nature of men and women are different.
That's right.
It is based on that anthropological differences among men and women.
That's right.
And this is exactly justice.
Yes.
Fairness of God.
Yes.
We believe that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is just, which is the second main principle of Islam. So that's why we have day of judgment. Otherwise, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala were not just if there was no day of judgment. So that is why I think Islamic teachings and doctrines, of course, is based on justice.
Yes.
And that justice is in accordance with the nature of the human being.
That's right.
So that's why we say that Islam is the most perfect religion. Yes.
Okay.
Because it is completely support and develop and improve our natural kind of desires and our natural kind of pleasures.
That's right.
This is what we must understand. That's why when it comes to this kind of feministic movement in the West that they are seeking after equality between men and women, it seems that they are completely wrong. Because they
Don't agree feminism.
Yeah, of course. Because
and we do not have Islamic feminism or something like
we
that.
We have Islamic feminism. Islam support women.
Women, but no feminism.
But not in that feministic way that the Westerners
do. Because when we say feminism, the Western values come to the mind, you know? It's not the Islamic
Of course, if feminism means to support, to help, to improve women, and of course, Islam support women.
Okay.
Islam defend and protect women against all the problems and challenges in their lives. But yeah, if we define feminism like those kind of certain and special kind of definitions that feministic movements in the West they give to the feminism, of course, we do not have feminism.
Okay.
But Islam is supporting both men and women in its teachings and doctrines. And of course, these teachings and doctrines must be in accord with the nature of the human beings. Otherwise, it will not help. It will not do anything for the human beings.
For sure it's not, because the new movements and the new generations of the feminists all across the world are very much anti the nature of the human beings. They go to homosexuality and lesbianism or LGBT or something like that. They support the rights of the women, you know, marrying the other women and the two mother family base foundations in the religions, which is considered a deviation, you know, of course, according to Islam. So according to what you say, the rights of the women must be observed, but feminism in the Western world is not. Okay, say, what's your point on that?
Well, what we know is that the feminism which was started in early time was different from what we see in today's world. The meaning of feminism has been even changed in the Western society. Mm-hmm. First, they were raising their voice for the wages. Yes. They were not given equal rights. The retirement time, for example, for the man and woman were different, and all those things. Later, it has become something which is known as the freedom for the woman in all aspects. Even if they don't want to clothe anything, they want to become naked, they should be free in certain countries. I don't know, the feminism is been taken as something which is meant to be the means of lust for the people.
Uh-huh.
It has been changed to such a thing, which is not the actual feminism even in the Western, we can say like, you know, the ideology, the main feminism which was. And this is because when something has come against the religion, that is where the ideology or something that you want to gain, and you start fighting against the religion and not taking your rights from the worldly made rules. The main idea, the main problem is that whatever we see in the world, in this material world, is that the rules are made by the human beings. They are applied, for example, in capitalism, in socialism, in Europe, in America, in other parts of the countries. But when these people, they start their movement, it was initially against these things.
Yes.
And then these powers, they changed the face or the root of this protest or the, we can say like the movement towards the religion.
That's right.
And they became against the religion. Religion is providing their rights to them. Mm-hmm. There is nothing wrong with the religion providing the we can say the rights to the women, the equal basis to get to perfection and all those things. But the point is that these people do not understand it. And that's why these problems are occurring, the way you said, like the concept of two mothers.
Yes.
The concept of LGBT, the homosexuality and all those things. These are because they even don't know what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Even the feminist does not know what they want and what they're after. On the other hand, when we look at the Islam, we see that the Islam is given the whole rights to the women. For example, we have a story from Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam that a woman came to Imam and she said that, "I never married, I never had kids, husband or anyone. I just prayed to Allah. Allah gave me these extraordinary powers," for example. The karamat, generally it is said. And then Imam replied to her and said that if this was the case, this was the criteria, then why Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made Hazrat Fatima Sayyidatun Nisa al-Alameen, the master of all the women of the world, where she had kids, she had a husband, she lived in a house, and she became the master of all the ladies of the world.
That's right.
So this rank is given by on the basis of something else, which is something related to the spiritual life of the man, human being. If we look at the physical aspect of this life, then obviously we will always have these issues. No one can give rights to the women when they want what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And they will never reach to the rights which they want. Even if they are free to work, even if they are given the same paid, same wages, same age of retirement, I don't know, the same way of clothing, even or after that, they will feel that they have not reached to that perfection because this is not about the physical body. It's something beyond that.
Just look at the cartoons on the feminist, magazines. There is a man, we can say, in the kitchen washing the dishes with a baby on the shoulders, and the woman is working out. And the feminists say, okay, this is what we are looking for after. This is, again, by the name of criticizing men's supremacy, you are establishing a kind of women's supremacy all across the world, I do want to say nothing is in its place. But in the religion of Islam, everything is in its place. The roles are classified, the talents.
After some time, you will have masculinism.
Masculinism, okay. sorry to say that, but some of the feminist looks, are looking how to make men pregnant. Is it at all possible, going and acting against the nature?
Yes.
This is really dangerous, And unfortunately, the deviated, some of the deviated feminist values are getting into the Muslim lands too. Okay, put off your hijab, put off your covering. This is your right. Who said so? The Western world and the women in the Western world established feminism. Why? Because the women were changed into sex idols in order to support their rights and not being sex idol. They said, we want have our own rights. What about Me Too movement? Just look at it, okay? What is the main claim of the Me Too movement? They were sexually raped, sexually assaulted, okay? Sexually abused, misused by the money, by the power, by the Hollywood, this and that. And now they established Me Too movement. Let's get back to the first place. If you covered your hijab, your chastity, your haya, nothing like this would happen. All these values have been in the text of the Quran, in the holy religion of Islam, more than 1400 years ago. Believe me, you have to go and check in the history which religion gives the value of the women. Just look at the text of the holy Quran that, for example, the titles Rajul and Emra are repeated each 24 times. Mm-hmm. Even Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala give the same share
to the thousands of the women and men in the Holy Quran. Thank you, my Sayyid Mohsen and Sheikh Rouhani, for your presence in the program Viewpoints. It was very kind of you talking about the concept of equality, whether equity in the religion of Islam. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us in another episode. God bless you. Afiya manallah.
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. The number of suicides among American veterans has increased in the past decade to the extent that the number is higher than the total number of American soldiers killed in the wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Vietnam. Publication of news and events related to troubles and problems as well as suicide of American veterans is censored by the media affiliated with the U.S. Republicans and Democrats. Today, the majority of veterans who have been engaged in looting, occupying and killing innocent people in Afghanistan and Iraq admit that their presence and participation in the bloody game of the White House and the Pentagon only led to the regression in their personal and social lives. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us for more. The website of NBC News has more on this story. A new study found more military veterans died by suicide than the Department of Veteran Affairs had previously reported. According to a study released on Saturday, 17th of September, by America's Warrior Partnership, a national non-profit organization that works to end veteran suicide, the number of suicide among former service members is 1.37 times greater in 8 states than the Department of Veteran Affairs had reported from 2014 to 2018. The report found if those states represent a national rate, that would mean about 24 veterans die by suicide each day, compared with the Department of Veteran Affairs' average of 17.7 suicides in that time frame. Jim Lorraine, America's Warrior Partnership president, who served in the Air Force for 22 years, said, "It's devastating. I'm not only a veteran myself, my son serves, my son-in-law serves as well. My wife is a veteran. I know a lot of veterans who have died from suicide." The report examined data from Alabama, Florida, Maine, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, Montana, and Oregon. America's Warrior Partnership, or AWP, said those 8 states, which represent 18% of all U.S. veterans, were the only states to provide usable data, adding that most states had been barred from releasing data because of confidentiality restrictions. The report found veterans who served less than 3 years were at the greatest risk of suicide, and the odds of dying by suicide increased by 56% if the veteran had received a demotion. The report said former members of the Coast Guard were most likely to die by suicide, followed by Marine Corps, the Army, Navy, and Air Force service members. The website of Global News explains more about the same story. A comprehensive new study has revealed that American military veterans are committing suicide at a much higher rate than the U.S. government is reporting. According to the new study, an average of 24 former service members are taking their own lives every day, 37% more than what has been reported by the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs. In addition, 20 veterans on average are dying each day by self-injury mortality, such as drug overdose. According to the new study, the official figures are lower because of undercounting related to drug overdose deaths and service record errors, which reviewed census death data from 2014 to 2018 for 8 states. It found thousands of cases of suspected or confirmed suicides that were not included in federal reports. Jim Lorraine, a U.S. Air Force veteran, said, "These are all preventable deaths. The number is less important than the methodology of tracking them and making sure we have an accurate count that can lead us to prevention steps." Jim Lorraine said many drug-related deaths in the states that researchers reviewed were classified as accidents or undermined, even though there were indications that they should have been tagged as suicide. There were also cases where the military history of the deceased individuals was incorrectly reported, resulting to a further undercounting of the number of veteran suicides. Suicide has been described as a national health crisis in the United States, with more than 45,000 Americans taking their own lives each year. Also, suicide rates among active duty U.S. military members are currently at an all-time high since record-keeping began after 9/11 and have been increasing over the past 5 years at an alarmingly steady pace. In fact, some branches of the U.S. Armed Forces are experiencing the highest rate of suicide since the Second World War. In 2021, research found that 30,177 active duty personnel and veterans who served in the military after 9/11 have died by suicide, compared to 7,057 service members killed in combat in those same 20 years. That is, military suicide rates are four times higher than deaths that occurred during military operations. The AmericanAddictionCenters.org website has more on the same story. A major yet preventable health problem in the United States is suicide. Sadly, veterans comprise nearly a quarter of all suicide deaths in the United States. In 2017, a team of researchers looking at data on more than 4.8 million veterans found that veterans with substance use disorders had twice the risk of suicide compared to those without a substance use disorder. Other commonly cited factors leading to increased suicide risk in veterans, as well as other groups, were anger, rage, mood swings, and episodes of anxiety and agitation, expressing feelings of having no reason to live, increased alcohol abuse and/or substance abuse, self-destructive and risky behaviors like driving while impaired. The suicide rate for veterans is 1.5 times higher than that of the general population. Comparing the rate among female veterans to non-veteran adult women, the rate is 2.5 times higher. From 2001 to 2014, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs reports an increased suicide rate among women using Department of Veteran Affairs services from 14.4 per 100,000 to 17.3 per 100,000 of the population. Suicide rates are especially high among older veterans. According to the Department of Veteran Affairs, in 2016, about 58% of all veterans committed suicide were among veterans aged 55 years or older. Several other factors, in addition to distance, play a role in higher suicide rates among older veterans. Certain emotional precursors may precede suicide events, including feelings of loneliness, isolation, hopelessness, and depression.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.